Okay, today is May 5th, the 4th of Iyar, celebrating Yom Ha'atzmaut. And in honor of the celebration of Yom Ha'atzmaut today, I decided to make it so it's both Parshat Kedoshim, which is what we in Galut are going to be reading this Shabbos, and it's also heavily based on Parshat Emor, which is what they'll be reading in Eretz Yisrael this Shabbos. So...
Please.
Everyone should go on mute if they want to. Okay, so there is a series of halachot, agricultural halachot, that are mentioned in this week's parsha and repeated in next week's parsha, and they are in very different contexts in each parsha, and Rashi has some really interesting differences in how he explains each one. So we're going to try to analyze Rashi a little bit. Again, I don't have all the answers, and maybe you guys have some interesting ideas about the Rashi, and then we're going to go a little bit more in depth into this halacha. So we first see it in this week's Parsha in Perek Yotet, and it is after talking about certain korbanot and the various time constraints on them, and then we have our pasuk, which is uvekitzrachem, et katsir artzachem, so while you are harvesting your land, lo techale pe'at sadcha, do not liktzor, do not complete the corner of your field to harvest. You'll see why some of these words are bolded in a minute when we get to the next, the parsha of Emor. And so that's the mitzvah of peah. V'leket katsircha lo telaket. And then it says, you shall not gather the gleanings of your harvest. And so it mentions both peah, the corner, and leket, the gleanings. So leket is if the harvesters are harvesting, you can imagine them going with their sickle or scythe or whatever it is, and they drop a few. So if they drop one or two, they can't go and pick them up. You would actually have, I'm giving a little foreshadowing here of what we might, this shear might lead us to. You can imagine Ruth, who stood behind the harvesters, picking up what would drop from them. And that's how the poor people would sustain themselves through the harvest season. And then it goes on to give other agriculture, v'karmecha lo te'olel, u'peret karmecha lo te'laket. So don't glean your vineyard, nor should you collect the fallen individual grapes of your vineyard. La'ani v'lager ta'azovotam. Leave them for the poor person and the stranger. Ani Hashem Elokechem. I am the Lord your God. So these are all these agricultural mitzvot that you need to do as you are harvesting your fields and thinking about the poor people who don't have their own fields to harvest. But you should know if a poor person does have his or her own field to harvest, he has just as much obligation in these laws as a wealthy landowner. Okay, and then the rest of this section, you can see I bolded all the lows. So it's a lot of famous things. Don't steal and don't lie and don't swear falsely and don't take the name of God in vain. Don't withhold salary and you can't steal from your workers. If you... something to think about. I'm not sure if it's just a Jewish worker or if it's any worker, but if you have in mind when you pay people who come into your home, if you have a cleaning lady or something, if you have in mind when you pay them that you are doing a mitzvah of paying them on time, it's a great opportunity to get a mitzvah. We have the famous don't curse a deaf person and don't put a stumbling block before the blind and don't pervert justice and don't show favoritism in the court. All of these things that seem to help to create a just civil society. And it's opened up beautifully by these agricultural laws about leaving to the poor. So as we're creating this just civil society, we open it up with these laws for the poor. So the Sifra, which I think we actually talked about last week as well, it's the Midrash Halakha, so the halachic Midrash, so not Agadatar stories, but actual halacha on the psukim in Parsha in Vayikra, Sifra, which is otherwise known as Torat Kohanim because it deals with a lot of the laws of the priests. This obviously is laws for everybody, and not necessarily priests who don't own land, per se. Okay, so it's commenting on, the Torah says, La'ani l'ger ta'azovatam. So leave them for the poor person and the stranger. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am the Lord your God. Ani eni gova mikem ela nefashot. Shenamar al tigzol dal. So Rashi, you see it here, quotes the same midrash, Dayan l'hipareya, a judge who exacts punishment. And for the sin, I will exact from you nothing less than your souls. In quotes a pasuk from Mishlei, do not rob a poor man, for the Lord will plead their cause and rob those who rob them of life. So the question here is, why, when it's talking about all these agricultural laws, does that little section end with Ani Hashem Elokeichem? That phrase, I am the Lord your God, exists over 30 times in the Torah, and it's usually about laws that you could maybe get away with not observing properly, that only you would know. And so it's there to say, somebody's watching over you. Hashem knows. So this midrash is giving kind of an ominous tone to this halacha, that if you don't keep these laws properly, if you plow your entire field, if you collect these little things that you drop, and then there's another one that we're going to see later called shichacha that's not mentioned here. If you forget certain sheaves in your field, you can't go back out and get them. So it's very ominous. God exacts punishment for this sin. And he'll, it sounds like, kill you. He's going to take your soul for not observing this properly. And it's very much a punishing God that you need to observe these laws and how important they are. Okay, so hold on to that, Rashi. I want to analyze some different sources on this pasuk and see what other people have to say about it. But we're going to compare this Rashi to the Rashi on the exact same halachot as they appear in Amor in a little bit. But first, we're going to see some other different views. And I included little biographies of all of these rabbis at the end. So Sforno, I think he's 16th century Italy. Let's see. Can see all the sources I rejected. Yes, Sforno, 15th century Italy. He was born in 15th, 16th century. He died in 1550. They don't know his exact dates. Okay, so here he is. It's funny because Safaria actually had a translation of the Sforno. And I was about to replace this is my own translation from when I taught this a long time ago. It's totally revamped from when I taught it a long time ago. It just happened to have a few translations. And the Sforno translation did not the Sfaria translation did not match up. So I didn't use it, which I felt weird about, rejecting the professional translation. I don't know. Okay, anyway. So Ula'oni, La'oni L'ger Tazavatam. So leave these things for the poor and the stranger. Be'er she'achar she'kibalnu oto le'elokim ra'ui lanu le'lechet b'drachav. So after we received it for God, it's fitting for us to go in his ways. Lasot tzedakah u'mishpat. To do tzedakah and justice. U'mimine hatzedakah hem leket shichacha u'pea ha'morin b'inyan. So what are these types of tzedakah and how can we emulate God? God has just provided us this amazing harvest. And now we have the responsibility to emulate God by giving from our harvest that God gave to us. And that's sort of like the theme of the Torah, that we don't say with our own strong arm we achieved this. We always keep in mind that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so we then have the opportunity to emulate God. And that's why it ends this whole section of these agricultural laws, I am Lord your God. Klomar, that is to say, umekevan she'ani elokecham, since I am your God, v'kol archoti, and all of my ways are chesed ve'emet, chesed and truth, ra'ui lachem, lishmor minei hatzdaka elu haritzuim lefanai. It's therefore fitting and worthy for you to guard these types of tzedakah, charity, that I like, that are good before me, desired before me. Okay, so we don't have to do that. So, and then it explains different types of justice, and that's the continuation of the perek of how to live in a just and civil society and being careful with money and not cheating people and all those kinds of things. So first we take care of the poor. First we are generous and we emulate God. And then we make sure that we are treating other people appropriately. So that's the Sforno, and that's how he explains the context here. And that's also how he explains the Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God. The Kli Yakar. So he says, Uma Shenemar Ubekitzechem Lashon Rabim. Okay, so look at this. If you didn't notice it before in the Pasuk, and you don't see it in English, because English you is both plural and singular. We stopped using the word thou a long time ago. So you see here, ubekirtzachem, the chem at the end is plural. In your plural harvesting, at kitzir artzachem, in your plural land, suddenly, lo tichale, that's second person singular. Do not complete the corner sad cha. The cha is singular. So we went from chem to cha, from plural to singular. And it continues through the rest of these laws in the singular until you go back to ani Hashem Elokechem, the plural. So what's the Kli Yakar is noticing this going back and forth between the plural and the singular. So here's what he says about it. So he's pointing out what I just pointed out to you between the plural and the singular. Lomar lecha, that's to say to you, she'afilu bizman k'tzira she'rabim kotzrim, even at the time of the harvest, where many people are harvesting, al tedame b'nafshecha lemor yechol ha'ani litparnes misadot shel acherim. Don't imagine in your soul that you can say, oh, the poor people can get their food from some other field. Even if I don't observe these laws and I don't leave the leket shichcha peah, the gleanings and the forgotten sheaves and the corner. Talmud Lomar, the Torah says, lo techale, you singular, don't complete it. Lo telaket, you singular, don't glean. Hachov mutal al kol yachid, this obligation rests on every individual. Ve'eino yachol liftor et etzmol, and there's no way to get out of it. Bishal acharim, by the way, by virtue of other people participating in this mitzvah. Ve'rem is od b'lashon yachid zeh, and there's another hint in the use of the singular, shehatzdakah tzricha liot b'seter, that giving the tzedakah needs to be done in a hidden way. Shelo yivadal shum adam ki'im lenotein u'mikabel, that it shouldn't be known to anybody except for those who give and receive. The one who's giving knows he's doing it, and the one who received knows he got it. But I'm imagining right now that it's sort of like going to the mikvah, where you can't come home and say to your husband, oh, guess who I saw tonight? So if you see people on your field, you can't then say to your friend, guess who was at my field collecting gleanings? It's not for anybody else's business. It's not for anybody to know. And that's why it's in the singular as well. It's a very personal, private transaction. V'yeshamrim lefisha kotzrim rabim, al kein amar ubekitzachem, aval mikomakom in hachov ki'im al bal hasada. So there are those who say that this distinction, this switching between plural and singular, is because a wealthy person would have many harvesters, if you've read the Book of Ruth, you see that there are many harvesters there that Boaz is supplying food for and shelter and everything. And therefore it says in your harvesting in the plural, because the harvesters would be the one doing the harvesting. Aval mikomakom in hachov ki'im al bal hasadeh. But in any case, regardless of the number of workers you have, the obligation rests on the individual owner of the field. Lechach ne'amar, and that's why it says lo techale, do not complete in the singular. Ki nira ve'enai kishur psukim elu. Kach nira, and that's how the Kli Yakar feels that it connects. And he's from, I think, a little after the Sforno, and he was in Prague, the Kli Yakar. Okay, so those are the analyses of the first Pasuk, where we analyzed its context as it precedes all these other civil laws, and we analyzed Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God, and we saw the switch between the plural and the singular. So now we're going to go to, in Israel, this week's parsha, for us, next week's parsha, Emor. And we see in Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel. So whenever I mention Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel, I have to mention my son Matan, who taught me this little trick, although he doesn't remember it, that if you want to sound really intelligent, so Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel is the chapter in which all of the holidays are mentioned, all the holidays on the Jewish calendar. And what's the mnemonic for remembering this? Perek Chaf Gimel is Chag spelt the wrong way. So Vayikra, Chag, that's where all the Chagim are with a Chet, in Chag with a Chaf. So now you'll know, and you can say, next time you hear somebody talk about a Chag, you can say, oh, the Pasukim for that is in Vayikra Perek Chaf Gimel. Okay, anyway, so I cut and pasted here, and I bolded, just so you can see the context. So it talks about Pesach first, and then it talks about the Omer, and then it talks about the harvest and our Pasuk. So it goes from Pesach to the Omer. Oh, and in this, it's you have to count Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot, seven complete weeks, which then, of course, which we're in the midst of right now, and leads us to Shavuot. So those are the psukim dealing with those holidays, Pesach, counting the Omer, leading to Shavuot. And then, after it explains those, we have Pasuk Kaf Bet, Ubekirtzachem et Kitzir Artzachem, in your harvesting of the harvest of your field, of your land, Lo Techala Pe'at Satcha, do not complete the corner of your field. And again, you see the same switch from the plural to the singular. Ubekitzrecha. And this is different. So I bolded it. I'm just going to show you what it looked like. So this is in during your harvesting. Okay? And our pasuk before said liktsor, to harvest. Okay? So it's not, it's very different. And we're going to see a commentary that will expand on that. V'leket kirtzecha lo t'leket, don't glean from your harvest. La'ani v'leger ta'azovotam, to, they should be given to the poor person and the stranger. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And then it ends, so it doesn't mention all of the grapes and the other different agricultural things we saw before. It just mentions Peya and Leket. I thought Shikha was also here. But anyway, and it ends the same way, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And then immediately after, it mentions Rosh Hashanah, and then Yom Kippur, and then Sukkot. So you can see it's very strange. If this is, as I said, the chapter where all the holidays are mentioned, we start with Pesach and then Shavuot, why does it mention this pasuk right in the middle about these agricultural mitzvot of giving to the poor? And then it continues with the rest of the holidays. And not only that, but we already saw this. We already learned this mitzvah in Parshat Kedoshim. So why is it repeating here? What's the point of repeating it? And what's the point of repeating it in the middle of the list of all the holidays? It's very strange. So first we have the Tosefta, which is concurrent to the Mishnah, and we have it extant. So it's the Mishnah was written down because there were different versions of the Torah Shel Baal Peh, the oral law going around at that time, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who's the author of the Mishnah, his goal was to try to put the authoritative version of the Mishnah together because there were all these different versions. And the Tosefta is one of those versions, and it's still very respected, and the rabbis and the Talmud bring it in as proof texts for different things, but it's just not the Mishnah. It's not codified as the Mishnah. And sometimes it's the exact same as the Mishnah, and sometimes it seems to contradict the Mishnah. And there are professors and rabbis who spend their whole life studying this and how when it contradicts and when it's the same. Professor Shama Friedman is one of the experts in this. Anyway, So this, it gives a little story. It says, Ma'aseh b'chassid echad. So I'm just going to read it in English. It happened with a certain pious person that he forgot a sheaf in his field during the harvest. Okay, so he was harvesting I don't know if he like realized it the next day or he was walking in his field and he saw a forgotten sheaf. And he said to his son, "Go to the temple in Jerusalem and sacrifice in my name a bull for Korban Olah, a burnt offering, and a bull for Korban Shlamim, a peace offering." His son said back to him, "Father, what have you seen in this commandment of Shichacha that caused you to rejoice about it more than all other commandments that are mentioned in the Torah? Why are you so?" Meaning, he saw a forgotten sheaf and he got so excited that he decided he needed to bring korbanot sacrifices at the temple because he was so excited that he saw this forgotten sheaf in his field. So the father said back to him, "All other commandments that are mentioned in the Torah have been given to us by God to be executed consciously, on purpose, and with intent." So, meaning what I just said to you before about paying your worker on time, if you're not conscious in that moment, paying your worker that you're doing a mitzvah, so you did the right thing, you paid your worker on time, but you didn't get points for it being a mitzvah because you need to have the intent. So, all other commandments are on purpose and with intent. But this commandment of Shichcha was given to us by God to be executed unconsciously, accidentally due to forgetfulness. So you can't on purpose forget a sheaf in your field. Because if we would have done it willingly, left the sheaf in the field on purpose for the poor to take in front of God, this commandment would not be counted for us as a fulfilled commandment of Shichcha, forgetting, but rather as a random act of kindness. He, the son, said back to him, the father, "It says in the Torah, when you will harvest your harvest in your field and you will forget a sheaf in the field, do not go back to take it. It shall be left there for the non-Jewish resident, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that Hashem your God will bless you with all the deeds of your hand." The verse is granted him, the farmer who left the sheaf in the field, a blessing. But why did the verse need to say explicitly that the farmer will get a blessing? Is not it a kal v'chomer, a fortiori? Derivation from minor to major, which can be concluded by us logically without the need of an explicit verse. Just like someone who did not intend to do something good, but he ended up doing something good anyway, the verse considers him as if he had done something good. So for sure, someone who intended to do something good and ended up doing something good that he meant to do, how much more so should get a blessing? So anyway, it's an amazing mitzvah that simply by forgetting, you get a mitzvah. Okay, so now this is the Sifra again. So this is the Midrash Halacha of Vayikra, otherwise known as Torat Kohanim. So before it was from Parshat Kedoshim, and now it's from Parshat Emor. So it's commenting on our verse here in Emor about Peah and Leket. And we have Amar Rabbi Avardimus v'Rabbi Yossi, v'chi mara katuv litna be'emtza haregalim. So it's asking the first question that we asked, one of the questions that we asked. Why did the Torah put this mitzvah right in the middle of the holidays? Pesach ve'atzeret mikan. You have Pesach and Atzeret is another name for Shavuot on one side. Ve'Rosh Hashanah ve'Yom HaKippurim mikan. And then you have Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and of course Sukkot from the other side. Ela l'lamed shekol mi shehu motzi leket shichcha upeah u'maser ani malim alav ki'ilu beit hamikdash kayam. So it teaches us that anybody who does these mitzvot, who leaves out the gleanings and the forgotten part in the corner, and in addition, the tithe given to the poor person, it goes upon him as if the Beit HaMikdash exists, v'hu makriv korbonotav letocho, and as if he himself is bringing offerings inside the Beit HaMikdash. And anybody who does not fulfill these mitzvot, malim alav ki'ilu beit hamikdash kayam, it's as if the Beit HaMikdash exists, ve'eno mekarev korbanotav letocho, but he does not bring any offerings. He doesn't do his obligatory offerings. La'oni u'leger ta'azovatam, you should leave it for the stranger and the poor person and the stranger. Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God. Okay. So this is the Midrash that Rashi is based on. A couple of things to notice is this idea of somebody observing these agricultural laws, which are only relevant for the land of Israel. And when he does it, even if the temple no longer exists, so if you're living after the destruction of the temple and you are farming in this area, it's as if the temple exists. You're almost like bringing it back to life, and it's as if you brought offerings to it. And if you don't, it's as if you're completely neglecting the temple. And then it ends with Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Now, if you remember, the first time we saw this pasuk, the same midrash, Sifra, had an explanation for I'm the Lord your God, and it was very ominous. I'm the Lord your God, and if you don't do these things, I'm going to come get your soul, right? And here, it simply ends with Ani Hashem Elokeichem. The midrash doesn't offer any explanation for why this is there. So Rashi's going to do something super interesting. So first, Rashi says, in your harvest, Chazar v'shana lavor alehem b'shnei lavim. So Rashi's going to give two explanations for why this is repeated, this halacha. The first one is that he repeats this in order that one who disobeys this commandment transgresses two negative commands. So when you don't leave these things in your field, you get a double whammy of a sin, not just one. And that's why the Torah took the time to repeat it twice, because it was that important. Amar Rabbi Avdimas, so this is interesting because you see it's a different name, or Dimas here. We had a ration there. There's no ration there. It's just interesting to see different versions of things. Rabbi Yosef, and this is Yossi here. Mara ahakatuv litna be'emtza raglim. So the same question. Why did the Torah put this in the middle of the holidays? Pesach ve'atzeret mikan, Pesach and Shavuot on one side, Rosh Hashanah v'yom kippurim ve'hachag. So here Rashi adds Sukkot, which wasn't in the Midrash from here. Sukkot is sometimes just called chag, holiday. L'lametcha, to teach you, shekol hanotein leket shichcha upea l'ani kera'ui. Anybody who gives leket shichcha upea, the gleanings, the forgotten, and the corner, to a poor person as appropriate. And again, he left out the Miser Ani here, and it's slightly different language than the Midrash. Ma'alin alav ki'ilu bana Beit HaMikdash. It's as if he built the Beit HaMikdash. So not just, as it says in the Midrash, that the Beit HaMikdash exists, but rather that person gets credit for actually building the Beit HaMikdash. V'hikriv karbonotav betocho, and he brought his offerings inside of it. And he doesn't give the negative if he doesn't do these mitzvot. And then, even more interesting, Rashi has a comment on Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Ne'aman l'shalem schar, who is faithful to give reward. So this is not ominous at all. It is pure enjoyment, positivity. If you do this, you get reward. There's no threatening, if you don't do this, I'm going to come for your soul, right? And just to pay attention, I don't know how conscientious Chabad.org is about these things, but here Chabad.org quotes the Midrash that I brought for you. But here, there's nothing to quote because it seems like Rashi is adding this of his own accord. So some thoughts that I had of this is that just the context. So we saw the first time the pasuk's mentioned, and the context is in building this just and right society and treating each other properly and building trust in a society in such a way that if you don't fulfill all of those things, that people are constantly perverting justice and cheating each other out of their salaries and putting stumbling blocks before the blind, literally and figuratively, then society is corrupt and you don't want to live there. And it's a really, it reminds us of Noah, where there was a flood and Hashem really did go and destroy the world at that time. And so that might be why Rashi gives us this more ominous explanation for I am the Lord your God, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. But here it's in a completely different context. And after Pesach and Shavuot is when you have one of the big harvests. And so it's this feeling of generosity and of abundance. And when you feel generous and abundant, it's very easy to then be generous and fulfill this mitzvah. And Rashi doesn't have to be ominous because it's easy when times are good at the end of the harvest to give all of these things to the poor. And Rashi's just reminding us here, I'm the Lord your God, and I'm going to reward you for taking part of your harvest and not taking it for yourself and giving it to the poor people. So if anybody else has any thoughts on this Ani Hashem Elokeichem. There's, if you go through the Ani Hashem Elokeichems, and I said there's over 30 times that it's mentioned, Rashi actually gives different explanations for each time it's mentioned. It's based on the context. It's very interesting. It would be an interesting study to do. Okay, if anybody has any thoughts, you can feel free to share. So now we're going to go a little bit more deeper into analyzing this mention here in Parshat Emor of this mitzvah. So beginning with the Ibn Ezra. So Ibn Ezra is also dealing, why is this mentioned twice? And what's the point of mentioning it again? So Shavuot is the first fruits of the wheat harvest. He's here, Shalot Tishkach, Masha Tziviticha, Lasot Biyamim Hahem. So it's mentioning this mitzvah here as a warning not to forget that which I commanded you to do during these days. So it's very interesting. So Ibn Ezra is saying that the first time it's mentioned in Parshat Kedoshim, it's more theoretical. Here it's just a law that you read about. But then we have to come back and repeat it when we're actually talking about the harvest festivals and mention it to say this is the practical application. It's not just theory anymore. It's practical, and this is what you have to remember to do at this time when you're harvesting the field during these holidays. That's Ibn Ezra. Haktav v'hakabla, who I've read in a few times, he was a colleague of the Malbim. He became a rabbi in his 40s in the 19th century. V'kotzurcha, v'katoshim amar liktzor. Okay, so this is where I pointed out to you, in your harvesting versus to harvest that we saw before, the different grammatical uses of this word in each of the psukim. So he says something very interesting. Kisham, so in Kedoshim, yazhir al chiyuvo lechatchila. So in Kedoshim, it's talking about your, the way you must harvest if you're going to do it in the ideal, correct way. Lechatchila, plan A. Shelo yigmor liktsor gam hapea. And you, so you should remember, don't harvest the corner. That you need to leave it. V'chan yashir al hadiavad. And here, it's warning if you accidentally did harvest your corner. So plan B. Im kfar kol hasadeh katsur, if the entire field is already harvested, sheshachach laniach pea b'mechubar, that you forgot to leave the corner of the field with the produce still attached, yiten masha niktsar. Then you still have an obligation to give from what was harvested. L'chein amar b'kotzrucha b'shuruk. And that's why it says, in your harvesting, with, this is the name of a vowel, the shuruk. I think in different times, we know what the vowels are now. So the shuruk is the vav with the dot on the top. Sometimes they have different, I think that's what it's here also. Rashi sometimes has different names for vowels than what we call them. V'chein amru b'Yerushalmi, and it also says in the Gemara, the Jerusalem Talmud, kilasa dehu, if he finished harvesting his field, kore ani alav lo techala pe'atzatcha, I call upon him, don't finish your field, the corner of your field, b'kotzurcha, in your harvesting, chazar pe'a le'omarim, bring back the sheaves to the corner. Shim lo hiniach pe'a min ha'mechubar, yitain min ha'talush. Because if he didn't leave the corner with the produce attached, he then has to give from what was detached. So that was really interesting. That, and also nice, like if you hired new workers and they didn't know the halachot and they accidentally harvested the whole field, so they still have the possibility of going back and putting it out there, and you can still fulfill the mitzvah retroactively. Okay, so now the Hamek Davar, which is the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, whose son was Meir Bar Ilan. So he took the name, the surname Berlin, and he Hebraicized it to Bar Ilan, who of course is the founder of the University Bar Ilan. But his father was a famous, I think it's Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. Let's just make sure we have it right. He was born in Mir, Russia. Yeah, the Yeshiva Volozhin in Russia. He supported the Chovevei Tzion movement, so it's good we're learning about him on Yom Ha'atzmaut. Okay, so he says two different things. So we're going to learn both of his on Yud Tet, so from Parshat Kedoshim, and then we're going to see what he says on our Parsha. So we're going to have it more closely together to compare. So this is from Kedoshim, where it was in the context of a just and civil society. Kol azharot halalu hema chukei Hashem shemivim shalom. So he explains that all of these warnings, they are the laws of God that bring peace. D'teva ha'aniyim lehitasef b'sha'at k'tzira u'b'tzira. Because it's the nature of poor people to gather at times of both harvest and also drought. What's the opposite of harvest? That's what a b'tzira is. V'im lo yahanu b'rabot ha'tova l'ba'alav. And if they don't enjoy from the plenty of the goodness of the owners, yavo ha'aniyim lidei klalot v'natzot, then these poor people will basically revolt. They'll curse and struggle. Masha'en ken ha'mirachim aleihem mivi lidei ahava v'lev tov, which is not the case for the one who has mercy on them. He brings love and a good heart. So if you're stingy, you know, that's what the whole Bolshevik Revolution was, right? Of all the landowners and wealthy people being stingy. And it's important for wealthy people to make sure that they keep the peace and that they have mercy on people with less, and that brings love and a good heart. Ube Shabbat Daf Kufnan Aleph, he's quoting Gemara, Ita kol hamerachim ala briot, merachamim alav min hashamayim. So not only should you have mercy on poor people for the sake of, so that they don't have an uprising, but also, when you have mercy on human beings, then you get mercy from heaven. So what, however you treat people is Hashem treats you. V'kol she'enu merachim ala briyot, and anybody who doesn't have mercy on human beings, ein merachamim alav min hashamayim. You don't get any mercy from heavens. U'b'shalhi horayot ita mipnei ma hakol rotfima ta'akbarim. He brings in another Mishnah Gemara from Horayot. Why does everyone chase after rats? Mipnei shesuru ra, because they want to get rid of evil. Perush, the explanation of that is lefi shetiv ola hazik la adam bli shum hana'avitam. Because rats, they injure people without any, they don't get any enjoyment or reason out of their injuring people. Al kein hakol son imotam. And that's why everyone hates rats bli siba vitam, without any reason. So just an interesting thing. I don't know what he's doing here, but he's talking about the responsibility of people of means to make sure to have mercy on people with less means, both for the sake of the population and for the sake of their own relationship with Hashem.
So are you saying that rats just do it because they want to do it? They don't just,
something like that. Yeah.
Get enjoyment out of it?
Yeah, I didn't look up the original source. So I don't know what the how it's explained there, but he's comparing that to wealthy people need to just be nice and create an atmosphere of love and generosity. Okay, so now Hamikdavar, the Netziv on our Parsha. Le'el, b'Parsha Kedoshim, k'tivei asharot halu b'chukei Hashem, hamivim lidei shalom. So he reviews what he said before, that above in Kedoshim, these warnings are written as the laws of Hashem that bring peace. K'mo she'be'ernu b'mikomo, as he explained in his place and we just read. Bekan seder hakatuv asharot halu b'makom shehisir katuv al mitzvot shemevi shefa bracha. So here, the Torah is ordered as these warnings in a place that warn that the psukim are warning on the mitzvot that don't just bring shalom, but they bring tremendous bracha, a flow of bracha. Hachinami azivat leket shicha opeat, peat umatanot la'aniyim. So these, what are these mitzvot that bring shefa brachot, this flow of blessing? It's leaving the gleanings and what you forgot in the corner and the gifts to the poor that bring bracha, they bring blessing. Kmo detznan b'masachet avot, as we learned in Pirkei Avot, de gazal matanot aniyim mevi leidei betzoret. That when you steal from the gifts of the poor, then you bring famine. That's the word I was looking for. You bring famine. So in the first context, it was about shalom. And in this context, it's about bringing bracha. And so I thought it was a nice comparison. Okay, so now Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, 20th century. His son is right down the street from where I'm speaking to you now in the Philly Yeshiva. So b'kiritzchem et k'tiritzchem. So when you harvest your field, ayin b'devareinu lahalan b'parshat re'eh. So he gives an explanation in Parshat Re'eh. Shabi arti sham lashon chukim. So it will mention chukim, which is a law, and it's usually referred to laws that we don't have reasons for. He's going to give a different explanation. Shenichtav b'parshat dechag hashavuot. So it's the word chukim as laws is used in relation to Shavuot. Ubi arti, and I explained dekayama dekatuv sham. And I explain on what it's written there. Ve'asita chag Shavuot. You should do the chag of Shavuot. Mesat nidvat yadcha asher titen. You should give whatever it is you're able to give. Klomar, matanot ha'aniyim shetzarich liten. That is to say, the gifts to the poor that you need to give. Mahainu kafima shebe'arti v'kam mekomot shelashon chok hu hava'al mizanotav ha'ketzuvim shahadam. So this word chok is not just a law that doesn't have an explanation, but he proves in Parshat Re'eh, and you'll have to trust me, I read it, but I didn't include it here for you, that chok also means a portion, a designated portion of food for a person. And he quotes from Yaakov and how he apportions food when during the famine, different things. V'lechein, kan b'parshat chag ha'shavot. And therefore, here in the holiday of Shavuot, achar she'amra Torah la'avish shtei lachem v'kriyat mikra kodesh b'bito melacha. So the various halachot of Shavuot, where you have to bring two loaves of bread, and you read these psukim that we actually read in the Haggadah, and you don't do any work. Amra Torah v'kirtzacham gomer lo techala. That's when the Torah says to do all these agricultural laws. And therefore, the entire purpose of Shavuot, he's saying, is to give gifts to the poor. And every single one of the laws related to Shavuot is all about these laws, these gifts to the poor. Then he goes to say, and this is where, if you remember, I gave you little hints about Megillat Rut. So therefore, kav uli krot Megillat Rut b'chagze. This is the possibility for why the rabbis established that we read the story of Rut on this holiday. Mipnei shemalchut beit David yatzah al yedei matanot ha'onim. Because the kingship of the house of David came out because of gifts to the poor. Okay? So just go back to this Rashi that we had. And we'll finish the Emet Yaakov after that. So Rashi is quoting the Midrash that says, anybody who does these laws of giving to the poor, it's as if he built the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? Who's the only person in Tanakh that we actually see fulfilling these mitzvot? Boaz. And who was, this is a little bit of a trick question, who was Boaz's great-great-grandson? Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon, who actually built the Beit HaMikdash. So for Boaz, in giving these gifts to the poor, and therefore establishing his relationship with Ruth and eventually marrying her and having a child, Oved, with her, it's as if he built the Beit HaMikdash, because Shlomo HaMelech would never have come into an existence without his having given gifts to the poor in the proper way. So beautiful. So that's what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is saying, that the entire house of David came out because of gifts to the poor. V'chein matzinu b'krashi gishas, and we also see in Megillat Rut that it stresses this, and it talks about the harvest times, the harvest of the barley, and at the end of the barley and the beginning of the wheat harvest, and you should look there. And then he says something interesting. Gam efshar dekoch nedivut ba'aleinu al yedei kabbalat ha'Torah. That this strength of this actuality of volunteerism, of giving, of charity, of donations, came to us by way of receiving the Torah. Meaning, it's really a novel thing, this idea of generously donating things. It's not really human nature so much. And the Torah establishes all these laws, and it instills into the Jewish people this idea of donating and volunteerism. And so he's saying that that's where it came from. And then he gives a proof text. And when I just want to be careful when I read these things. I think I usually hate the expression Judeo-Christian, but I think in certain instances it is correct. I would say just Judeo, or I would say Abrahamic, that it's through the Torah, which is the basis for all the monotheistic religions, that they then glean these sensitivities and some of these attitudes. And so when we talk about a Ben Noach here, a non-Jew, I think in today's world, most people probably fit into the more Judeo-Christian way of doing things. But in any case, when he's talking about a Ben Noach, he's talking about a non-Jew. So he says, Sharei Ben Noach ne'arag al pachot mishava pruta. So a Christian, not Christian, a non-Jew, is killed on a value that's even less than a pruta. A pruta is like a penny. It's a very small amount. And so they have capital punishment for stealing something worth even less than a penny. And for a Jew, we don't have that sense of capital crimes for these types of small amounts. I'm going to explain that to you better in the following Gemaras. And therefore, the rabbis taught, Beger Shabalit Ger, when somebody's coming to convert, it's very important to teach a potential convert about the sins, going back to Parshat Kedoshim and the ominous tone of not fulfilling these mitzvot, and they need to learn what is the sin of not fulfilling that mitzvot of generosity. It's very interesting. So here's the Gemara that he's basing that on. We'll just read in English. The sages taught in a Braita, with regard to a potential convert who comes to a court in order to convert, at the present time when the Jews are in exile, the judge of the court say to him, what did you see that motivated you to come to convert? Don't you know that the Jewish people at the present time are anguished, suppressed, despised, and harassed, and hardships are frequently visited upon them? And if you ever had the merit to be at a conversion, that's indeed what the rabbis say to them. If he says, I know, and although I am unworthy of joining the Jewish people and sharing in their sorrow, I nevertheless desire to do so, then the court accepts him immediately to begin the conversion process. And the judge of the court inform him of some of the lenient mitzvot and some of the stringent mitzvot. And they inform him of the sin of neglecting the mitzvot to allow the poor to take gleanings, forgotten sheaves, and produce in the corner of one's field, and about the poor man's tithe. Okay, so that's where it's written there. And then here's explaining the non-Jewish attitude about money versus the Jewish, and it's a continuation of that Gemara later, a little later. The master said in the Braita, with regard to a potential convert who comes to a court in order to convert, the judge of the court say to him, what did you see that motivated you to come to convert? And they inform him of some of the lenient mitzvot and some of the stringent mitzvot. Gemara asks, what is the reason to say this to him? It is so that if he is going to withdraw from the conversion process, let him withdraw already at this stage. He should not be convinced to continue. As Rabbi Chalbo said, converts are as harmful to the Jewish people as a leprous scab on the skin. As is written, and the convert shall join himself with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob, which has the same letters as a leprous scab. This alludes to the fact that the cleaving of the convert to the Jewish people is like a scab. The Braita continues, and they inform of the sin of neglecting the mitzvah to allow the poor to take gleanings, forgotten sheaves, and produce in the corner of one's field, and about the poor man's tithes. The Gemara asks, what is the reason to specifically mention these mitzvot? Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said that Rabbi Yochanan said, because a Gentile is executed even on account of stealing less than the value of a pruta, since Gentiles are particular about even such a small loss. And an item that a Gentile steals is not subject to being returned. Once you steal something, a Gentile doesn't have the right to return it and be absolved of it. He is not obligated to return it to its owner, since Gentiles are unwilling to separate even from items of little value. A potential convert must be made aware that if he converts, he will be required to relinquish some of his property to others. The Braita continues, and they inform him of the sin of neglecting the mitzvah. So meaning, he has to be conditioned to become generous and to be able to give to the poor. And that's what the Emet Liakov is explaining. Okay, so now to conclude, we have the Imre Emet, who is the son of the Sfat Emet, and he's quoting his father in a lot of these things. And so he mentions these concepts that we've talked about in this shiur. He mentioned several times, and some of them were a little bit too deep for me, so I'm sharing with you the parts that I understood that he wrote about concerning what we've just learned, and they're really beautiful. So, Ita b'sfat emet, so he's quoting this, his father, La'ani, So when it talks about, so remember, it says you have to leave these for the poor and the stranger. So he says, La'ani, the poor person, this is hinting at David HaMelech. And the ger, the stranger, this is hinting at Ruth. V'lachein nichtava parsha zo achar Pesach v'shavuot. And that's why we have this interruption of these laws after we mention Pesach and Shavuot. Shavut nikarva al yedei haleket shavizman hazeh. Because Ruth was brought close by way of this mitzvah of leaving the gleanings. Kol ma shemoshe Rabbeinu hitzchil yigmor David HaMelech. And anything that Moshe Rabbeinu starts, David finishes. La'ani v'lager ta'azovatam. So now this is interesting. He's taking a very interesting reading of this. And we're going to see a little bit more of what he means, why he brings Moshe Rabbeinu into it. So he's telling, instead of reading it in context and say, leave these agricultural items to the poor person and the stranger, it's almost as if he's saying to Moshe, Moshe, it's not your job to complete the work. You're going to bring the Jewish people up to a certain point, and then you're going to leave it to the Ani, David HaMelech, and to the Ger, the stranger, Ruth. And they're going to complete the task for you. So that's really interesting. And then in a different essay, he quotes the Midrash that Rashi quoted about why it's in the middle, and it says, if he built the Beit HaMikdash, Hayom Gamkin Begalut. So he says, so too today in exile, Yesh Ke'ilu Bana Beit HaMikdash. It's as if they built the Beit HaMikdash. And he gives another example, some examples about how somebody who does tshuva, he's likened to a person who's built the Beit HaMikdash as well. Lo tichala pe'et sadecha hu remez l'kibbutz nitzotzot ha'kadosha. So now he says, leave the corners of your field. This is a hinting of the gathering of the holy sparks. And then he quotes the Sfat Emet, dila'ani v'lager ta'azovatam, leave it for the poor person and the stranger, who remez l'David shabami root. So this is a hint of David who comes from root. And it says in Menachot, b'sha'a, and then he brings this, the Midrash that you probably all know about how Moshe saw Rav Yekiva putting crowns on the letters, and he's saying, who's making you wait to give the Torah until after you put all the crowns on each of the letters? And Hashem says it's Rav Yekiva. And Rabbi Akiva has within him the ger, the stranger. And he says that Rabbi Akiva, and he quotes this Rabbeinu Nisim, the Ran, that Rabbi Akiva was a descendant of Sisra. Sisra is, we read about him in the book of Judges. He was the one who was attacking the Jewish people, and Yael put the tent peg in his head and killed him, if you know that story. And he says Rabbi Akiva is actually a descendant of Sisra. And so he showed Moshe Rabbeinu, he's just the beginning. And in every generation, there is a Rabbi Akiva, the soul of the stranger, which brings this, I'm not sure, there's something very deep here that I'm not sure what it is, he brings a stranger. In another essay that I didn't really understand so well, but I just want to give you the gist of it, he explains that, in the Psukim and Parshat Emor, that when it says, when Rashi says, Pesach and Shavuot are here, and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are there, he's saying that, just in the context, Pesach and Shavuot already happened, they're in the past, and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are in the future, and that is the ultimate redemption. So that through this mitzvah of giving to the poor, it can lead us to the ultimate redemption, as it did in the time of Ruth, where through Boaz keeping this mitzvah, it led to a redemption. So too, may we all be inspired in our own way, even if we don't have fields to plow, but in our own way to being generous and giving to the poor. And please God, all of those acts of kindness will bring us to the ultimate redemption. Bim Hiravi Aminu. Okay, thank you very much.